Profile interview. Ntato Selebi is my guest, Executive Director for the South African Actuarial Development Program. Ntato, thank you so much for joining us, my brother. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Brawls, and thank you very much to your listeners.
Well, how do I say that word? Actuarial.
Actuarial.
Actuarial. All right. Hey, yeah. These are big. Listen, I've always been fascinated. I had a conversation with another guest some time ago, and I sort of described actuarial sciences in a way that I have come to understand it, that it's almost like being able to look into the future using all sorts of mathematical formula, algorithms, and very educated intuition, I suppose, to predict certain scenarios to be able to deal with issues of risk so that companies can invest accordingly. Is that what actuarial sciences is?
But you know, Brahobs, I think we should take you to schools with us for you to be able to break it down, because you've just done exactly that. That is by and large what an actuary does. But obviously, one of the things that we've also begun to realize in the profession over some time is that different branches of our economy are starting to utilize the skill, because not only does it allow you to plan, does it allow you to deal with risk, it also helps you anticipate some of the things that we may not have anticipated. And I think the unfortunate riots in July a couple of years ago were a stark demonstration of what many organizations had not taken into account, and the lack of skill in our country in this regard really came to the fore. But yeah, I think we should sign you up, Ralph.
Yeah, you just need to help me out with the maths, bro. You know, I'm of the old school, the arithmetic old school. And I don't know whether you guys need guys like that. But talk to me about the initiative of the South African Actuarial Development Program that you have initiated. What is the aim? What is it that you're trying to achieve there?
You know, bro, the South African Actuarial Development Program was birthed in 2003. So it's an organization that's been around for, this year we're going to be marking 21 years. And basically the idea was, in 2003, when you looked at the landscape of actuaries in our country, we did not have a single black African, South African, who was an actuary.
Yeah.
And as a result, there needed to be some intentional interventions that were going to address that issue. And that's what SADP has been all about since 2003, to say, how do we begin to change this landscape, which is unnaturally imbalanced? How do we begin to ensure that those young, aspiring, able, talented youngsters from all walks of life are given the opportunity to be able to study and qualify as actuaries? So that is basically what SADP is all about. And what we have started to do as of last year is literally just rebrand and reposition the organization, because we felt after 20 years, although we've had some great successes, we still have a long way to go, and we need to begin to reassess where we are and position ourselves in such a way that we remain relevant and are able to speak today's message in such a way that youngsters and corporates and everybody else is able to hear.
One of the conversations that's been taking place this week, as politicians talk, as talking heads like myself talk about that important day of the 29th of May, is that we need to have a greater focus and a mainstreaming of the economical conversation in this country. So what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that the purely economical conversation in this country is usually the pastime of elite. people that are educated to a certain level, people that use certain types of language, but the economy of the country needs to be the conversation of everybody. It needs to be mainstreamed. It needs to be made relatable to everybody, because all of us are participants in this economy. And some may argue that the mainstream political conversation that we have in this country is already the economical conversation. And I accept that argument. I accept it. I am, however, saying that we do need to start to have an understanding of the numbers. More mainstream. That kind of, and my thought went immediately to economists, and more specifically actuarial scientists, right? And for that reason, I get a sense that's why we need more actuarial scientists, actuarial practitioners like yourselves. How does the actuarial scientist, what role do you play other than the role in a company, in an insurance company? What does that fraternity do for our country and our economy?
Bob, you're going to forgive me. I'm going to have to correct you before we continue.
Sure.
I'm not an actuary.
Oh.
I happen to head the side P. I had a similar challenge in my previous job. Many people thought I was a chartered accountant, but I was not.
You just smell of numbers.
but my background is in education and in law. So right. so I just wanted to just clarify that.
Understood. Thanks, Mobile.
But to your question, Aubrey, I think the role that actuaries play is critical, not just to organizations or to companies or to corporates, to our economy. It's very, very big, because at the heart of what actuaries enable us to do, you said it in your intro, it's almost like having a crystal ball and being able to look ahead and see, you know, if we build a school here, what are we going to need? If we build this mall over here, what are we going to need? If we build this complex here, is it going to need a mall? Is it going to need a school? Is it going to need? So it's going to be very important for us to understand that the role that actuaries play, in many ways, besides the very complicated and complex models that they use, is enable us to be able to be a step ahead, to kind of look into tomorrow. Now, part of looking into tomorrow is being able to plan properly around our economy, plan around expansion, plan around the different types of jobs, the different types of areas of our economy that need growth, that need development, that need support. So the actuaries do a whole lot more than what, you know, typically we would give them credit for, and their role is hugely significant.
And I imagine that that significance, like all very capable people always have, just in terms of character, is that they themselves downplay it. I mean, I've spoken to a number of actuaries before. And you'll see how they'll sort of, you know, and it's beautiful. It's humility. It's a nice thing. But what I'm arguing is that we are at a critical place as an economy, and we need the input of real thinkers about the technicalities of our economy to start mainstreaming the solutions that are there, right? But mainstreaming those solutions. And my question to you, Ntato, is how do we raise the profile of actuaries and maybe other players in the financial and economic space to a place where the language that they speak and what they see is at least what we debate about? At this stage, Orbs can speak, we can... He can come up with a whole lot of nonsense on radio, and he sets the agenda for an economic conversation. When in fact we have actuaries, we have proper economists that should be really giving us the talking points that wake us up to the realities of where our economy can go and where it is going. How do we do that?
And I think you've hit the nail on the head. We must raise the profile. I'm always saying to many of the colleagues within the profession that too often they're busy whispering in the dark. And that is not doing us any favors. Too much of the conversation is being monopolized by our politicians, many of whom unfortunately don't really have too much of a clue about what they're talking about other than what they've been given by their spokespersons or their speechwriters. And unfortunately, many of these professions and careers are also very unnaturally skewed. So the language that is being spoken or that which is being spoken about doesn't necessarily represent the country as a whole. So the more that we need, particularly around actuaries, are those who have a lived experience of growing up in Mamelodi, of growing up in Katlehong, and understanding how that skill which they have now acquired, how it is being used in many ways, maybe not so good, you know, in such a good way to serve those communities. Yeah. So I think the way we raise the profile is starting with what you've done, Brahobs. You are the first one to have someone from SADP come in and talk about the work that they do at schools and universities in trying to produce more black actuaries. Mm. So we need it to become mainstream and not to be, as you rightly said, you know, something that only those who are educated are spoken are able to speak about, because it is something that impacts all of us. We must shout, we must scream, we must get many of those black actuaries that have qualified to come out and speak about their experiences, to speak about what they've been involved in, to speak about the importance of the work that they do, because a lot of the work that they do is unfortunately in the background. Mm. And it needs to come to the fore.
I've had the pleasure of, and the shame, because of some of the things that the youngsters were bringing to the fore in terms of a debate about where our country is going, what our country represents. I had the pleasure of sitting around with young people a couple of years ago that were part of the Fees Must Fall movement.
Yes.
And I was sitting there as an older guy saying, guys, but you know, even when we were at universities, at university, maybe two, three decades before you were born, we were dealing with similar issues. We were dealing with issues of access. We were dealing with issues of finance. We were dealing with all of those things. So I want to say that this is your country and you can't spite your nose. You can't cut your nose to spite your face. These are your things. Don't. And one of the youngsters, one kid, man, said to me, "Bro, Ops, I know where you're coming from. On a lebondo." He says to me, "Bro, Ops, I know where you're coming from. You have a bond. You've got car payments. And you want stability, you see. You don't want things to, because you are so invested in this unfair economies that you want to stop the voice of us young people who are not encumbered like you, who are trying to point to a problem that if we fix now, we can guarantee stability for the longest time, because you guys failed when you were at university to address these issues as." And I said, "What is it that you guys think you're so clever about, that you see so deeply better than my generation, that you can say that to me?" And right. he said this to me. I know you're thinking, what the hell? But just bear with me. He said this to me. He says, "Until we are able to solve our problems. Not just get qualifications in order for us to climb onto a plane, to be employed in a big company in the West or the East, anywhere else. But until we are educated to conceptualize and to find relatable ways of solving our problems, we are not educated, he said. And so I resonate with what you are saying now, to say that we need to have actuaries who have a deep understanding and relate to the realities of this country. And that is why I'm so excited about your initiative of getting highly trained individuals who are actuaries who come from backgrounds and understand the real issues of this country without being sanitized by a great salary and then moving off to some other part of the world where they'll make even more money, but the problems of back home are not solved. So I'm asking, is the initiative of wanting to create more black actuaries, understanding that aspect, Ntando?
Yes. It is very much. And I think the demographics of where our qualified fellows, the actuaries, are coming from speaks to that idea, perhaps. Some of our best qualified fellows are people who, when they were students, were people who were not to be given an opportunity because they didn't sound, they didn't have a twang like I do.
Didn't roll their R's.
And didn't roll their R's and didn't sound maybe as smooth or whatever the case might be. But brilliant minds who understood and who very much are interested. And this is the other part, perhaps. Not only do they understand the challenges and the problems, but are very interested in finding solutions. So part of what we want to do is to go into the deep rural of Limpopo, of KZN, of Eastern Cape. We want to go to the townships. We want to go to the semi-rural areas and say, you are the people who are missing in this equation. Because, unfortunately, transformation is also still a function of numbers. To the extent that you can have one, the impact is not going to be as great than as if you had five. So we still want to make sure that you are there, but you are there understanding your role, not only as having an opportunity to qualify, but as having a role to play in bringing about change. So you are definitely spot on. It is something that we take very seriously, something we are very, very intentional about, and hence our program in terms of not only providing bursaries, but nurturing these students, providing them with the support, providing them with the mentorship. What it's meant to do is not only deal with the attrition, but also deal with them understanding that it's bigger than them. They happen to be the beneficiaries at that particular point, but it is much bigger than them, and our country definitely needs them to keep that in mind as they move on and qualify.
When our president, President Cyril Ramaphosa, spoke about Intswalo a couple of months ago,
yes,
I understood what he was trying to say. The idea that we need to transform society in such a way that this is a sustainable project. In other words, that we don't have pockets of excellence, but we are excellence. That everything. And that is going to be about making sure that we have the skills, the education, the disciplines, the theoretical grounding, the political awareness. And I'm not talking party political awareness. I'm talking about just generally understanding how the world works and what are the issues, what are the power structures, what are the having that understanding in order for us to be able to apply what we've learned at our universities for the betterment of the people of this country. So I heard what he was saying. But the transformation project, Ntato, seems to have become nothing more than a tick box exercise that lacks soul, that lacks genuineness, that lacks an urgency, that understands that if we don't get this thing right, Oaks, we're in serious trouble. Absolutely. Now, here's the question. What is the ethos? What is the frequency, the vibrancy of this good thing that you guys are doing within your organization? In other words, is there a fervor or is it just another tick box exercise?
But obviously, I would honestly be not true to what we are all about if I didn't say in the office, within the team, within our partners, within our like-minded organizations, it is there. The fervor is there. The understanding that which you paint is very stark for us. We understand that it cannot be a tick box exercise. However, I believe the profession as a whole, up till this far, it has been but a tick box exercise because the numbers speak for themselves. It's 20 years later. The entity has produced 104 black fellows that are members of the Actuarial Society of South Africa. That is a contribution of 23%, Braot. That's one organization. That's the South African Actuarial Development Program. Contributed 23% of black actuaries to the Actuarial Society of South Africa. So around the profession as a whole, it has not been taken as seriously as it ought to. It has been but a tick box exercise. Particularly when you look at what it really takes to be able to support a student through formal education in terms of university, provide support to them post-graduation towards them writing their board exams, and ultimately with them qualifying. It's an arduous road. It's an arduous process. But we find very little organized and unorganized support towards making sure that happens. You know, it's one of those things that as if one is asking, where are you going to hire? Where are you going to place? Where are all these black actuaries going to work? And whenever I'm asked that, I'm always, the hair on the back of my neck stands up because it tells me that those people don't quite understand what it is that we're doing. So unfortunately, Brahob, it's not as much as it should be, nor is it out there in some spaces.
What's the problem? Are we not articulating the vision, mission, and reason for this well enough? What's the problem?
We've been articulating it for 20 years. And not only articulating it, but providing proof, living, breathing, qualified proof that the program works. But not only does it work, that it adds the kind of inclusivity that the workspaces need to have. The reason is just that I don't think there is much of a commitment to it.
Why? Ntato, but
no problem.
But what I'm really trying to get to is the very existence of this industry depends on a constant supply of qualified actuaries. The very, very longevity that this industry is going to enjoy is going to be dependent on a constant supply of actuaries. Surely the industry should be able to see that. What is the impediment? Why is it that we're not getting the support for these kinds of programs?
Truth be told, from where I sit, we're not getting much support for these types of programs because they are programs that are supporting black students. I see no other reason because everything else in terms of gaining entry into these programs at universities, you need to have a certain level of ability. You must have passed at the requisite marks. There's no differentiation between the students that come in, whether it's according to race or gender. You must all meet it. So if that's the case, and the ones that are there are managing to come through, not in the greater numbers, then why would there be no support? I can't find any other reason, because once they qualify, they also are able to deliver in terms of what the job market requires of them. So I am left but with one possible area in saying it's not an area of interest for the profession as a whole to convene and coordinate a much more robust program to ensure that in 2024 there is a change in terms of how we support students who are wanting to become qualified fellows, and in particular black students. I'm hoping that through these conversations that we might even begin to find the real reason, because honestly, where we sit, we can't find one.
That is really discouraging. I mean, if all of the reasons why these kinds of programs exist are demonstrable, and we are who funds these programs typically?
Typically, we've been very, very fortunate right now. SASRIA is one of our biggest funders, and they are one of our founding funders. We have a number of, I think, brothers, if I count correctly, we have less than 12 organizations that fund SARDP. Liberty is amongst them. Hanover Ray is amongst them, ECIC, FACET through their support programs has funded us, in CETA, and Swiss Ray has funded us. So it's organizations that First Rand Foundation has just signed a new contract with us to fund 15 students. Discovery has signed a contract to fund the 5 students. So that's pretty much where the support is at the moment. And yet this skill is needed across the spectrum of business and our economy.
And those that do support you, on what basis do they say they support you?
It's fully understanding that transformation is not a luxury. it is a necessity. It is also understanding full well that as good corporate citizens, they subscribe to the idea of leveling the playing field as much as possible and providing the kind of access that is going to be able to provide transformation. But there are some, obviously, who for their BEE points and for their EE stats, they would support us. And for us to run away from that would be unrealistic. And we must acknowledge that for some people, that's why they do it. But those are the reasons why the corporates that fund us, perhaps.
Well, I suppose it's good that you do it for your BEE points and your EE status. I suppose it's okay, I suppose. But I suppose we are looking for a more heartfelt a more inline aligned understanding of why it is we need to do this kind of transformative work, especially at that level. Anyway, yep. And I suppose it's a fight that you're going to have to keep fighting. You're going to have to refine your messaging to the various corporates that you speak to. It's going to be perhaps work that you have to do to try and make people see value from their perspective, right?
True.
From their perspective. True. As to why these transformative processes need to be followed and that we need to support them. What is the goal?
The ultimate goal for us is, can I just say, maybe twofold. One, our program currently is at the three universities, at WITS, UCT, and the University of Pretoria. Our goal is to raise enough funding to be able to expand to four other universities that are accredited by the Actuarial Society of South Africa. But also to, secondly, is to create a pipeline of black students that will enable us to really make a significant dent in terms of our transformation numbers. And that's basically where we are geared up to do for the next 3 to 5 years is expand to those four institutions and also have a pipeline where we are funding at least between 30 and 50 first years every year, because only that kind of input into the system of a diversified, supported, and I must emphasize that aspect, perhaps, supported student body will begin to make a difference in terms of our transformation target.
Give me a sense of the kind of kid who dares even speak to the SAADP to say, listen, I think I want to try this out. What kind of a person? Give me a profile of a youngster, or maybe not even just a youngster, that decides, listen, I want to
I want to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about someone who is very curious, first and foremost. Does not necessarily accept things on the surface, wants to dig a little further and get an understanding of what makes that issue or that problem tick. A problem solver. Someone with a great deal of chutzpah. You know chutzpah, bro.
Yep.
You know, that sense of, not giving up and continuing to work. Someone who is quite good with numbers, who understands numbers very well, and their ability is demonstrated in terms of the kind of marks they get. We're talking 80% and above. We're talking about someone who is very interested in working around models. We're talking about someone who, when I spoke about chutzpah earlier, people who, when they are seized with a problem, it's as if it consumes them until the solution is found. That is the kind of person that we're looking for in terms of those who are interested in looking at the profession and then qualifying as actuaries.
Those kinds of people are few and far between, particularly from our communities, because many of them would probably not have had the exposure to people or to the ideas that you've just expressed. My English is not doing well today.
Ke Friday, bro.
Yeah. I was looking for that word pipeline earlier on when I couldn't find it. Maria, ke Friday, bundles are low. Hey, man. Anyway, so most youngsters from the communities that we come from would probably not have had exposure to other actuaries.
Yeah.
He or she might in fact be the first person in that family to pass matric. How do we create an aspiration that is real, not just romantically real, but real for a kid who has never been exposed to the idea that they can be an actuary? How do we? You see, my goal, Ntato, is to try and mainstream excellence, bro.
Yes. Yes.
My goal is to try to make people understand that you too can. But I understand that most of the guys and girls that you are trying to help would probably not have the experiential framework to be able to dare to think about actuarial science, right? I mean, if I can just get a job, go EPW for it, to go.
Why not?
So the moment you're talking about actuarial science, I didn't even know that there's a thing like that. How do we get more youngsters to understand the disciplines, the hard work that's going to be required in that profession, but dare believe that they too can be part of that fraternity?
One of the things that I have been very fortunate enough to learn over my 21 years of working in this space, perhaps, is that alone, we definitely will go faster, but not far. And part of what we need to understand and appreciate and work intentionally towards, and not be worried about who's going to get the limelight, whose logo is going to be put out there, whose logo is going to be first. If we understand that, then if we work together, you've already started for us, Brother Obs, that the conversation is taking place as we're doing right now. We are also coming into collaboration with other like-minded organizations. We've just signed an MOU with SAICA around working with them in terms of the school's pipeline. We are working with Sastria. We're working with Liberty. Part of it is us working together and making sure that what we are doing is not window dressing. And what we are doing is, as tokenism, I said, intentional. Yeah. It's not tokenism, because we know the power of the change that can be brought about by giving exposure and opportunities to meet the actuary, to engage in a conversation, to be mentored by an actuary. So that's part of what we do. And we have a very good campaign coming up after the 16th of May, after we've relaunched the rebrand of the organization. The rebrand is launch is happening on the 16th. After that, we will be having a campaign throughout the year where we will be focusing on ensuring that the message gets out there, because too often it hasn't been out there. We're partnering with the Department of Education. We are partnering with schools. We're partnering with alumni who are very much interested in going back to their communities to begin to speak about that which they do, because it's not necessarily sexy or glamorous, and doesn't lend itself very well to being a cover girl or a cover boy. But it is something that we need to continue to speak about, and we need to continue to expose our students to. But partnerships and collaborations, Robs, that's the only way we're going to do it.
Where did you grow up?
Bro, you just caught me off guard there. Bro, ke holetse ko Katlehong. I grew up in Katlehong, in a section called Msiliki. I then had, I don't know if to call it a fortune or misfortune, to then be taken to New York, where I then spent 16 years of my life. So I grew up between Katlehong.
That's where that R comes from, right? Okay.
So I grew up in Katlehong, between Katlehong and the Bronx in New York.
The Bronx. And do you find that many of the issues that you've experienced in Katlehong were prevalent, existing in the Bronx?
Very much so. The only difference, I think, there were the vast opportunities that people could tap into to begin to change their life circumstances, when here we still find those to be very limited.
I'm going to say something that I know is going to sound a little controversial, Mibrur, but put on your seatbelt. Wear a helmet.
I'm wearing my seatbelt, Mibrur.
So we as South Africans have been accused by some of having a problem of exceptionalism. In other words, we have been accused of thinking that we feel more pain than everybody else. Our problems are just greater than everybody else. That we are the best to articulate the idea of being the undisputed champions of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, that has created a particular entitlement from the world. And that is the reason why many of our youngsters, as talented as they may be, whether it's on the soccer field, whether it's on at the university, whether it's the reason why, as talented as they may be, don't break through is because we haven't understood the fact that we need to work for stuff beyond just having the narrative that says we come from a legacy of suffering. How true is that?
But obviously, it's very true.
Yay!
One of the things that I used to do whenever I used to go to presentations and speak to students about these professions and qualifications, I would tell them that unfortunately, if they still have the mindset that being black is enough, it is not enough. I think it worked, and it is something that was put out there for the longest, such that we took ownership when we shouldn't have, and that is not as I hear you, not to deny the challenges and the issues and the discrimination and you name it. It's not to deny that, but it's to say we can't be champions. We can't be champion victims. What we have to be looking at is our talent and our skills. Being what precedes us, not our suffering or the challenges that we had, being what comes before us. People must see our excellence first, and then be shocked by the fact that we come from circumstances from which we come. And that is something that we continue, particularly in SADP, to continue to preach to students, to say, your circumstances are the least things that we are most concerned about. What we want is your exceptionalism. It's your ability, your excellence, your ability to rise above, your ability to do, your ability to be more than what the world expects you to be.
I'm supremely proud of you, my brother. I'm supremely proud of the work that you guys are doing. I wish you all the best.
Thank you, brother.
And I don't know how else we can help except to encourage other platforms to have this conversation. We need more actuaries. We need them. How do people get in touch with you if they want to be part of the programs? How do they get in touch?
Well, if people want to get in touch with us, we have our email is info@saadp.co.za. They can visit our website, which is saadp.co.za. They can call our office to get in touch with us on 011-642-2202, 011-642-2202. They can look at us on X, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, pages that speak to the South African Actuarial Development Program. And that's a very good way to be able to get hold of us.
Ntato Silebi, Executive Director for the South African Actuarial Development Program. Thank you very much for joining.